What's up, everyone? Welcome to another edition of the Mongols podcast. I'm Mike. He's Kev. Coming up on today's show, we're going to dig into Red Bulls 2's latest game against Charlotte. We'll break down their style and key players and talk about how the Hounds can get their first W this weekend. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen. Out to the middle, back to
So, Kev, it just dawned on me, is it, like, blasphemous at all that I'm sitting here recording this podcast while wearing a Red Bulls jacket?
I had that thought, and I was like, well, I mean, it looks good, right? I mean, it kind of, I don't know. The Red Bulls are your MLS team, so it's not. I don't say it's blasphemous. It's okay to support these other.
I honestly looked down while the music was playing, and I went, oh, crap, I'm wearing a Red Bulls jacket. Just to give you a little bit of background.
We just need to get you a Riverhounds jacket, that's all.
I desperately need a Riverhounds jacket, so we need to make that happen. I've only been to a few games this year, and every time I go in, the team store is packed, and so I haven't been able to snag anything, and the online store still isn't up yet. So, Hounds, get on that. Get that online store up so I can snag some gear. The Red Bulls, I followed the Red Bulls MLS team. I followed them for a number of years, and it was like one of those things where every year I was like, that's it. You know, they keep messing around. I'm not going to follow them anymore. But it was like one of those like slow motion train crashes where you just can't turn away. So then you watch one game or you see one set of highlights and you're just sucked right back in. So even this year, you know, I've been watching so many USL games, not just Towns, but also, you know, other teams to do the coverage that I haven't had time to really watch any MLS at all. And I was listening to Extra Time Radio's podcast, which they do a pretty good job covering the MLS. And they were saying that, you know, the Red Bulls had played the best game that they have played under their head coach, Jesse Marsh. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll go check out the highlights. And I'm watching the game and I'm like, oh man, like Mike Grella and Lloyd Sam, like I'm watching all these players and I still know their names. And it just, it pulls at the heartstrings, especially once the kids walked in and they're like, oh, are you watching Red Bulls? I'm like, oh man, yes, I am. So, but you know, just to put it out there, I have a very clear disconnect between Red Bulls 1 and Red Bulls 2. I have no such loyalties or sentiment towards Red Bulls 2.
I'll check you on it if you do.
Yes,
if
you check up, me on that.
I'll put you in your place, Mike.
Yeah, so feel free to do that. I even tried switching to like Columbus, and I was like, you know, Columbus, they're going to be partnering with the Riverhounds. I'm going to watch Columbus, and I follow Columbus a little bit, and every time I see something about the Red Bulls, it's you know what that's like with like Liverpool.
Oh, absolutely.
Where it's like no matter what, it's just like something happened at some point in the past where it's like ding, they're your EPL team now.
Yeah,
it's Liverpool.
You don't pick the ones you love, Michael.
Yes,
just happens.
Yeah. So, you know, the Hounds are still my team. They're my home team.
They're still the ones we love.
They're still the ones we love. But in terms of the MLS.
Yeah. There are other lovers sometimes.
Ménage à trois. All right, I got to keep this clean. Let's get into this. So one of the things before we actually start to talk about the recap of the Red Bulls 2 latest game, the Copa America Centenario is coming up. For those who don't know anything about it, it's basically a tournament between 16 teams from both North and South America. It's going to be June 3rd through the 26th this year. It's being hosted in North America. So lots of games across lots of cities, lots of big teams. Argentina is going to be here. Messi's going to be here. Make sure you go check them out. The good news. Well,
Brazil, right? Neymar as well and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Neymar will be here. I mean, it's going to be huge. but both Romeo Parks and Sergio Campbell were both named to the 40-man roster for Jamaica. So, you know, kudos to both of them.
That was amazing. That's great.
That's awesome.
Well deserved too. I mean, in all the previous podcasts we've been talking about, I mean, we've constantly have Romeo Parks and Sergio Campbell on our lips. So
yeah, Absolutely, absolutely. If they end up making the final roster, I'm guessing they'll miss anywhere from 2 to 6 games between May and June. The tournament is mainly in June, but obviously they'd have to be in camp and getting together. The Reggae Boys also called in former Houndskeeper Ryan Thompson. So for those of you who followed the team last year, you're familiar with Ryan. Again, kudos to him. He did a pretty solid job for us last year. So, yeah, just a bit of news. Get that out of the way. Congrats to those guys. It's going to be a great tournament. And, you know, it didn't even dawn on me. It's about a month away, so it's coming up really quick. So there's going to be some more soccer being played right here in our backyard. So if you have a chance to get out to one of the games, there won't be any games here in Pittsburgh. But I believe there's going to be a number in a few cities that are, you know, within driving distance. So
yeah, and it's worth the trip. See some serious talent. I mean, yeah, I mean, just think about all the South American teams, you know, and we even forgot like Uruguay with Luis Suarez and everything like that. So pretty much you have the entire like Barcelona team that you could watch, which is really cool. Anyway.
All right, so let's get into the recap here. Kevin and I both watched the Red Bulls' latest game, Red Bulls 2. I'm just going to say Red Bulls from now on. The Red Bulls 2 latest game against Charlotte Independence. It was played this past Sunday at 4 p.m. It was at Red Bull Arena, and just to get it out of the way, Red Bull Arena is like the most beautiful stadium in terms of a soccer stadium. I will say, aside from Highmark, you're sort of like,
two things. Yeah, I mean, so you're right. As far as like stadium is concerned, you're right. I mean, it's the right infrastructure for a team like the MLS. I think if I was a USL team, I would almost kind of like, I don't know. I'm not saying like hate playing in that arena, because it almost kind of feels like playing in this big empty skeleton sometimes, because you're never going to be able to, well, I shouldn't say never, but I mean, there's a lot of seating there, and you're going to need a lot of people to fill it. Thing I love about Highmark is it's like the perfect size for the Riverhounds, and you'll get it packed, and you'll bring people in there, and you get fans close to the pitch, and that's great. The second thing is, yeah, on top of it being a nice stadium, the pitch is just beautiful to play on, it looks like. I mean, it's like really high quality natural grass, a big pitch, it looks fun to play on. So I mean, it's something at least teams can look forward to when they go away to the Red Bulls, is playing on a really nice pitch. But
Kevin, you speak about the pitch as if you have some personal experience playing on that pitch.
Oh, I know, Michael. It was many moons ago when I was a younger lad. I actually forget when it was. I forget.
It was a few years ago. So a few years ago, Kevin and I took a road trip up. It was around Thanksgiving to visit our third brother who lives in New York City. And it just so happened that the timing was right, and the Red Bulls were having an open house to potentially try to lure in more season ticket holders. But part of the shtick was you could just go in and you could tour the stadium. You could go down on the field and take a PK. You could meet Tim Ream, who U.S. men's national team player, Tim Ream. We didn't get to meet Tim Ream, but we did wait in line and we did take PKs. And even though the stadium was probably about as full as it was for this game that we just watched. But, you know, walking up to that PK spot with whoever that poor goalie was that was in there taking, you know, 150 PKs just from random people in line. But walking up to that spot on that pitch and sort of looking around and, you know, being able to bury one,
it felt good. It was awesome. At the same time, you know, walking up to the PK spot, I mean, it's, you know, now imagine fans all around you screaming at you. Now imagine it's 2-2 on the 91st minute and you're stepping up in the penalty spot. That goal looks a lot smaller and that goalie looks bigger. It was even just like the little wager we had. I was like, well, I can't let Mike score and me not score. Like, this has to, you know, and so it was a lot of pressure. And I don't know. I put away mine. Did you? I forget.
You played, like, when we were in line talking to a few people, you know, there were some guys who were like, you just go up and rip it. Like, just hit it as hard as you can. And I'm like, no. See, I'm trying to actually score here. Did you place yours?
Of course.
Do you remember what you did?
Of course I did. No, I think, I think I went right down bottom right corner. That's the way you got to go.
Yeah, I think I did the same thing. Basically, the way that I lined up, it gave the fact away that I'm right-footed, and so before I actually hit the ball, the goalie started to shade to his right, my left, and so as soon as I saw that, I went bottom right corner as well, just sort of passed it in. It felt somewhat anticlimactic at that point, but to like turn around and see the whole pitch, and
I think it was pretty fun because like I think both of us like peeled away to like want to celebrate, yes. And then we realized like how pathetic it was. Like everyone else, like, dude, it's not a big deal. Like we were like sliding. We didn't slide on our knees, but yeah, we wanted to.
You know what we need to do now? Now that we've had that experience, we need to work out something with the Hounds so that we can try to take a PK at Highmark and we can compare the experiences. You know, maybe we'll talk to Hunter, see if he's willing to get between the pipes, and he'd probably stuff.
Oh, he would.
Us,
he would completely stuff us.
And then he'd laugh at us as he punts the ball.
Like, dude, don't take it so seriously. Just let us score.
Come on, man. Don't be so mean. Hunter's like the nicest guy ever. Yeah. We're hating on him. No. Yeah. No. You keep on being you, Hunter. Anyway, let's actually talk about this game. So going into the game, I shouldn't say going into the game. After this game, the Red Bulls are now in third place in the East. They're 3-1-2. They have 11 points. Their only loss was this game that we watched. So far, they've had 9 goals, 4 against. That's a +5. That's a pretty good ratio. And coming into this game, they had 4 consecutive clean sheets, which is pretty stinking impressive. They were ranked number 1 in USL's power rankings heading into this game as well. So they played some of the same teams that we've played. They tied TFC 2-2, similar to what we did. They tied Rochester 0-0. But then they beat Louisville 2-0. They also beat Bethlehem 4-0 and Wilmington 1-0. So,
good results.
So yeah, I guess, but really good results.
And I was actually, I was really impressed with Charlotte in this game. I thought they played really well, kind of exploited some of the weaknesses that I'm sure we'll talk about later. But I mean, just looking at the results, I would say now's the kind of perfect time to play them. Maybe their confidence is running high. You know, they know about the power ranking and all that kind of stuff. And you know, their scoring goals was still being tight at the back. And then they go up against the Charlotte team, let 2 goals in and get the first loss of the season without putting away any goals of their own. So I don't know. Confidence is probably a bit low. We have them at Highmark. So. So far, obviously, it's the best time to play them after their first loss. But hopefully, we can keep that going.
Yeah, and let's, before we get into some of these takeaways, we always try to talk about some of the key players to keep an eye out for. Now, the one caveat with talking about the key players this time is that in this game, Red Bull had 9 players in their squad that were sent down from their first team. So there's a lot of turnover here in terms of who goes up and who goes down. And, you know, that's one of the advantages of having your B team basically playing in the same stadium, training with the same guys, is if you need to make those switches, you can make those switches. So the first two guys that I'm going to talk about here, and Kevin, feel free to interject anything that you've seen with them. They may or may not be playing with Red Bulls too when we play them this weekend. They may be back up with the first team. The first one is Sean Davis. Sean Davis is number 27. He plays a holding midfield position. He played a decent amount with the first team last year. He actually scored against Chelsea when really it wasn't even Red Bulls 2. It was like Red Bulls 2 plus a bunch of their academy players beat Chelsea in a preseason match last year. And there was a lot of hype around Sean Davis then. Like I said, he's number 27. He's only 24 years old. Kid has a pretty good head on him. And he plays that holding position well. He has some pretty good distribution. The other one is Anatole Abong. He plays with the first team opposite Bradley Wright Phillips up top. The guy can play. They typically play with a lone striker on the first team, and that's Bradley Wright Phillips. But if they ever switch to a 2-man front, Abong is the first one to go in. He's a big body. He can get his head on the ball. He can draw people away from the other attackers. I would be surprised if he's playing this weekend, but he very well could be.
He's kind of an all-around player, it seems like, too. He kind of,
yes.
He has a bit of everything. He has a bit of pace, a bit of power. And a bit of nouse about him where he knows where to be, he knows how to play.
Yeah, and then two guys who were probably more likely to see for sure. One is Tyler Adams. He's number four. He plays the other holding midfield position, which we'll talk about sort of the formation, the interesting formation that Red Bulls 2 plays. He plays the other holding midfield position. He's, like I said, he's only 17. He got his first MLS action a few weeks ago, so he has some experience up in the top level. The kid has some quick feet. He makes some decent decisions, but at the same time, he's still young. So there were a lot of times that his passes weren't connecting, but he's not afraid to take guys on and play that holding midfield position well. And then the last one I want to mention is just Rafael Diaz. He's actually their backup keeper. They have Ryan Mara, who is injured, but I thought Diaz played a great game. I mean, Charlotte ended up putting away two goals, but they very easily could have been up 5-0. There were a number of really key saves that Diaz made to help keep them in the game, and he's been part of the reason why they've had a clean sheet for the past few games. I think at one point I read somewhere that he was one of the USL Players of the Week a few weeks ago. So he's solid back there in goal. Even if you have a clear shot, that doesn't mean it's going in. He does a really good job back there.
Just, and also to note, you know, you pointed out Sean Davis and Tyler Adams, both of the holding midfielders. One thing I was really impressed is they seem to have a really good chemistry about them. It seemed like, you know, they moved as a unit all across the pitch. They were always like 15 yards apart from each other. They were always parallel with each other throughout the entire, you know, up and down the pitch. You know, they'll both get up and attack. They'll both drop back and defend perfectly in line. I was really impressed with how well they structure themselves.
That's one of those. Do you want to continue? I'm sorry.
Sorry, you lagged a bit there, and I was like, I don't know if he's just stuck or he wants me to go. So now you can go. That was it.
I was gonna say that's one of the things that the Red Bulls as an organization does really well is they're sort of the poster child for developmental soccer in the U.S. They have a very, very strong academy system. A number of their players end up coming through and being sold to European clubs. You know, the most recent one, or the most recent big name one, was Matt Miazga, who basically came through their youth system. I don't know if he actually played for Red Bulls 2, ended up making it into the first team roster, and then was bought up by Chelsea, and now he's playing for Chelsea. But there are examples. Tim Ream is another one who sort of came through the youth system, played for Red Bulls 1, got sold. So in terms of other teams trying to build out youth systems where they're funneling talent through their academies, through their USL team, up to the pro team, they are sort of that model that everybody's trying to emulate. But the thing is, they teach that system from the academy all the way up through the pro level so that they can just easily move. Like, if they need somebody, they pull out Sean Davis, they put him in. Or if they need Tyler Adams, they pull him out, they put him in. And you know the system that you're going to play. So,
That's that Red Bulls knowledge coming in handy right now.
I know, right? And that was actually my first takeaway is I put like father, like son. This team is trained to play like their parent club. So they play a high press, fast ball moving game. Their formation is a 4-2-2-2, which is kind of like, what?
See, I know the commentator said that. Did you actually see a 4-2-2-2?
So when I sat back and I looked at it, there were times it looked like a 4-2-3-1, but there were definitely times where it looked like a 4-2-2-2.
See, the majority of the time, for me, it almost looked like a 4-2-1-3. I saw a lot of instances when they would kind of get the ball out wide, push their fullbacks high, and then you would have three of their attackers on the shoulder of Charlotte's defense, and you know they definitely commit numbers forward, and I just kept seeing those same three players committing forward. That just gave me the sense that they kind of play more of a 4-1-2-3, which I have some comments about eventually that we can get to about how maybe we can exploit that. But going back to your previous point, how they're trained to play like Red Bulls 1. Yeah, that was the first and biggest thing I noticed actually while watching this game was they play like a team that's better than they are, if that makes sense. So they try a lot of things where they just maybe don't, they don't, I don't want to say they don't have like the talent to pull it off, but maybe they don't have the talent to pull it off on a consistent basis. So they'll do a lot of really good things and then just kind of give it away cheaply, like high up the pitch. Or they'll try to, like, you know, chest it down to another player. You know, sometimes it comes off, sometimes they just, you know, give it right to a Charlotte player. So I thought, I don't know, I thought that was really interesting where, you know, if they're in form, if they're in the zone and it's coming off for them, I think they can look like a team that's maybe head and shoulders above a lot of other USL teams. But I think just as easily, you know, they can have a 10-15 minute span where, you know, nothing's coming off and they look really poor. So I don't know. I probably more times than not, they looked a bit polished against Charlotte. But I definitely noticed that where, yeah, there was times where it was great play and then times where I was like, You guys just had this great passage of play, and then you just do that. I don't understand what's happening here. So, sorry, I wanted to comment on this. This too.
No. That's fine. That's
the next thing.
That's something that I noticed as well. Where this is a very, very young team. You know, Sean Davis is one of the oldest players at 24. So they're put in this system, like I said, like father, like son, where they're trying to implement this system, and so they try a lot of 1-2 touch passes. They're trying to do a lot of high press. And at times they pull it off, but to your point, at times they just don't have the experience to know when to force something and when not to. And that often leads to turnovers, which is something that, you know, we may be able to try to exploit. To your point about, you know, is it really a 4-2-2-2 or is it a 4-1-2-3 or whatever you said?
Yeah, 4-2-1-3, yeah.
4-2-1-3. I think that's the advantage, and I think that's why they like to play that 4-2-2-2. The parent club plays a 4-2-3-1, but it's a very free-flowing 4-2-3-1, where sometimes it's a 4-2-1-3, sometimes it's a, you know, 4-2-2-2. It really just, it allows for more movement on the field within that system. So I think they may line up as a 4-2-2-2, but at any point in the game, it could be a 4-3-1-2 or a 4-2-1-3 or whatever they need it to be at that point. Those players know that system, which is really dangerous if you're playing against that, to have a team that has sort of that system in place and that knowledge to do that. But with that said, there were a number of times that Charlotte had the ball, and you could see because they have sort of this set 4-2-2-2 that they're playing, and to your point, they stay pretty compact. They're 15 yards apart from whoever it is they're playing with. That left the wings wide open. I mean, there were large swatches of the field that just nobody was in. And if we could park somebody out on those wings, I think we could totally exploit that open space. You know, there were a few times that Charlotte started switching the ball back and forth, and you just see this whole cluster Red Bulls switch over to the other side of the field, and they switch all back to the other side. And I think that we have the players to sort of take advantage of that on the wings.
Yeah, no, they play very narrow, and I think two things is they'll push their fullbacks really high. You know, when they're in possession, they very much exaggerate the fact where they'll, you know, they'll split their center backs, they'll push their fullbacks really high up the pitch, and all of their width comes from their fullbacks. So if we can nick the ball off of them and transition quickly, oftentimes Charlotte actually caught them with really only three defenders, essentially, because one fullback will be really high and the other one will maybe tuck in a bit more. But to the point where, while watching the game, I almost had to like stop and question myself, like, are they playing three at the back right now? Because one fullback would get caught up the pitch, and then they essentially have three defenders. So I think that's something. Yeah, and on top of that, even when the fullbacks are dropped back in a good position, then you just need to challenge, essentially, you know, let's say they do play a 4-2-1-3, then ideally those kind of two wide players in the three, they'll have some responsibility tracking back and helping out their fullbacks. So it's then now putting pressure on them to make sure that they're doing their defensive responsibilities. And I don't think they want to. I didn't see a lot of their attacking players getting back and helping out in defense. So I think... if we are going to exploit the Red Bulls, it's going to be in wide areas, I think, and it's going to be transitioning quickly. Because, like I said, even when Charlotte nicked the ball back and started to counter, I was really impressed with the Red Bulls two holding defensive midfielders. They were organized. They were back. They were in line, and they just dropped right back in front of that back four. You know, 7 out of 10 times. I think the wide areas is where we're going to get the most joy. And like you said, I think we have the players to do that. Parks has had a lot of joy coming off the left side. And obviously we have pace up and down the ring with people like Russell and Hollingsworth. So I think it could work out pretty well.
Yeah. And that was my other thing, was just counter. You know, we've talked in previous games how we said we would like to see the Hounds sort of set up shop in somebody's final third and really sort of nick the ball around and get their chances on goal. Watching the Red Bulls, I don't think that's the kind of game we want to play here, because when the Red Bulls collapse back in front of their goal, they're really good on defense. Like, when they got numbers back, Charlotte didn't have a chance. Where Charlotte really got their chances was in transition, catching them on the counter. Because absolutely, the Red Bulls like to press so much, there were times where there was literally nobody in the Red Bulls' half except for their keeper, because their defense gets so high up the field. I think what we do is, you know, we let them come into our zone, we let them nick the ball around a little bit, and you just have, you know, Herzog or Hollingsworth just waiting at midfield, so as soon as we get the ball, you lob it over the top, and they're off to the races. And there were a number of times that Charlotte was able to get right behind their defense. I think I put down, there was 3 or 4 times in the first 30 minutes. I think 2 of those, they were offsides. But, like, that, I think wide play and catching them on the counter is how you beat this team. You don't try to methodically work it up and try to break down their system. They're too tight, and they keep things in front of them well. But if you can catch them on that break, you got a shot.
And to be fair, I mean, we've been kind of doing that for the past 2 games. I mean, I would tentatively say successfully, even though we've gotten 2 draws. But we hit teams on the counter, and, you know, if we had 4 chances, we would put 1 or 2 of them away. And that's exactly what needs to happen in this game. And kind of going back to the previous point, it was Charlotte's second goal really came from, I mean, I don't know, I'm hesitant to say the Red Bulls defender was maybe trying to play like a better defender than he was, but essentially the ball was coming up, and I don't know, I feel like at most times you either put a head to it and put it out for a throw in or something like that, but he kind of tried to like step back and kind of, I don't know, either collect it or boot it with his like right foot, like at hip width level, and he just kind of scoffed it, and it fell right to a Charlotte player in the box, and they just slotted away quite easily.
The downside for us is that player for the Red Bulls was Gideon Ba, who they brought in to play with their first team, and he's been nursing an injury. He was somewhat responsible for both of Charlotte's goals. They pulled him after 45 minutes, and apparently that was the plan all along, was just get him 45 minutes, get him back into game shape. But yeah, he did not look good. I don't know if, you know, like I said, 9 players from the first team were playing in this game, so I don't know if we'll see him again or not, or who we'll see. But yeah, it's like you said, they just pounced on it. Charlotte pounced on it,
which could also play in our favor if 9, you know, if they made essentially a wholesale change. I mean, I think they're playing, you know, they didn't have games postponed like we did. And so I'm pretty sure they've been playing on a week-by-week basis. So that means, I don't know, if they made a wholesale change here in this and their first team's going back up to their first team, essentially, then they're going to be playing players that haven't played maybe in 2 weeks. And that doesn't sound like a long time, but I think the longer you're away from competitive matches, just the rustier you're going to get. So, I mean, that's potentially just another thing to maybe look out for. And maybe a reason, I mean, you know, Charlotte jumped on them early, got 2 goals within, what, like 25 minutes? And on, you know, exploiting them in that way on top of the fact of maybe them having a little bit of rest to shake off. That could be something that we can look at, although I don't think we've necessarily started strong at the beginning of games, but maybe now it's the opportunity to try it.
Yeah, you know, let's we'll see. It's back at Highmark. I don't think we've played a game there yet where it hasn't been either frigid or raining. So maybe hopefully. This is the game where it's actually nice. Before we get into to the specifics of our game, Kev, were there any other takeaways that you had from this game that we saw?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we kind of hinted, I think, in the last podcast that we were slightly eager to maybe see a 4-4-2. And Charlotte, I don't know, it's, actually, no, that's a lie. Charlotte didn't play a 4-4-2.
There were times that they did have a 4-4-2. It in my notes.
Okay, so maybe when they were in attack, maybe they played more of a 4-4-2. But I was actually really impressed with, once again, Charlotte was pretty structured, especially in defense. I think when they were on defense, I don't know, for me it looked like a 4-3-2-1. And yeah, they were very structured in that way, and I think they did a really good job defending the Red Bulls in that way. But yeah, I mean, like every positive opportunity that came from a Charlotte attack was from getting, you know, starting the attack on the right side and either continuing up that right side or maybe taking one or two touches in the center of the pitch and then switching it out to the left. I think their entire game, I think, was played out wide, and yeah, they found a lot of success with that. So, I mean, if there was ever really a time to try out maybe a 4-4-2. Because I would be a little worried whether the Red Bulls play a 4-2-1-3 or a 4-2-2-2, they obviously want to play in the middle of the pitch, and their width comes from their fullbacks. So I think it could be a little dangerous if you try to maybe go toe-to-toe with them and stay congested in the middle of the pitch. I think you need to stay congested in the middle of the pitch on defense, but maybe when you're looking to attack, you need to spread the pitch wide. You need to pull their defenders out of position, and then we could start looking at, you know, either putting balls over the top or on the ground into like diagonal runs and trying to finish home that way. But I would like, you know, like so we don't know more than the manager, obviously, but you know, I'm eager to see maybe a more wide formation, especially when we're attacking.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, you talked about them playing narrow. They're very good at playing narrow. I mean, they do a lot of 1-2-touch passes that will leave us chasing the game, and we don't want to get into that. So, yeah, just to second, you know, what you were saying about playing wide, hit them on the counter. That seems to be the way to do it. And it seems that's exactly what we've been doing the past few games. So,
yeah,
hopefully we sort of keep it up.
I mean, just think about that. I mean, two draws, we stopped the bleeding. Imagine if we, you know, beat the Red Bulls and beat the Red Bulls convincingly. Yeah. That'd be a huge step forward in our season. And I think that would get everyone excited about the upcoming games and everyone put in a little more positive and optimistic mood going forward. So let's hope that happens.
Yeah, let's do it. So this game, let's transition here. We'll talk about the game itself. As we said, Red Bulls 2 coming to Highmark Stadium. It's going to be Saturday, 7 p.m. It is superhero night. So if you dress like a superhero, you get 25% off at the gate. Kevin, what would you wear if you were there? Yeah, there we go. Putting you on the spot.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, capes are always pretty cool, but I feel like I'm probably not a cape man. You know, the Flash is cool. I've always wanted to run fast. But I don't know. I never really liked the little lightning bolts on the side of the head. I'm sure some of the more modern designs don't have the lightning bolts, but I always envision the Flash.
Have you seen the new Flash show?
No, I hear it's really good, but I haven't.
It is. Yeah. I could see you pulling that off. You sort of have the tall, lanky build that you could pull that off.
I feel like blonde lends itself more to the Flash too. Like, I don't know if, what was it? What's the guy's name? Something Ryan, maybe? I don't know.
I can't remember what his name is. Kind of stuff. Yeah.
I don't know. I would imagine the Flash having blonde hair. And I'm sure the comic book fans out there are just like yelling at me right now if I'm wrong, but I apologize. Yeah, I'd probably go Flash. Yeah.
So you'd go Flash.
What about you? You've always been kind of a Batman guy.
I don't know what that says about me, that you think that I'm a Batman guy.
You're a playboy, Michael. That's what I'm saying.
I am absolutely not a playboy. No, I don't. That's a good question. I mean, when I'm thinking costume, my immediate reaction was something like, you know, do like full on elaborate like Jack Sparrow, like because I would try to stay in character like the entire time. I'd be that annoying guy that would like, you know, be talking like a pirate. But that's the thing. Like, I don't think that's a superhero. So if we're talking, you know, like Marvel, DC universe, I know we've talked to, you know, the Steel Army, and that you guys dress up as Power Rangers. We talked about the Green Ranger. I think any of the Power Rangers costumes would be cool. I think, you know, doing, if you were able to get like a legit looking like Spider-Man costume, that Spider-Man would be pretty awesome. Yeah. But I don't know if I would want to like look through that mask the whole time. Batman.
Anything
maybe Captain America.
Anything skin tight, I'm down for.
I'm not doing one of those like full body spandex suits. That's a little bit outside of my comfort zone. At least in public, I know. Gotta commit. Anyway, so if you dress like a superhero at the gate and get 25% off, you would also get a free mini travel bag from Highmark. So that's one of the other promotions. It's also Kids Day, so there's gonna be face painting giveaways. There's gonna be a bounce house. So take the kids, dress them up. They get in cheap. They get a lot of free stuff. And the team's also going to be recognizing breast cancer survivors. So it's like it's not even like a trifecta. I don't know which, what do you call like four things that
are. Quadreca. Yeah.
Quadfecta. That sounds like a disease. but no, it's going to be time if you get done with the game. Yes, I apologize. You have quadfecta. No. all right. So let's get into this. We just talked about the Red Bulls. And again, like we said, the players that we saw in the game against Charlotte may not be the same players that we've seen, but the good thing to note is the Red Bulls clearly have a system from the academy to their pro teams that they want to implement. So even if we don't see the same players, we're likely to see the same sort of style. And really, it's the style that we think we can exploit based on the players that we have. So thinking about that, Kev, you know, if you... It's always tough to do a lineup prediction because A, we never know, and B, we always pick some sort of formation that we never actually go with. So if I'm predicting a lineup for the Hounds, you know, predicting being in air quotes, I say we come out with our typical 4-2-3-1, and I think that it's the usual.
This is what you think they'll do, right? Not what
this is
you
what I
want to do. What you think they'll do.
This is what I think they'll do, but I also there's a little hint of what I'd like to see, and we'll see if you could pick out what you think that is. So I think we go with Gilstrap and goal. I think we go with the usual suspects across the back: Morrell, Hunt, Campbell, Russell. I think the two holding midfielders, I think we go with Branson and we go with Kerr. And then I think that three, we go Parks, Maloto, Hollingsworth. Now that Maloto seems to be back to full speed, and then we put Herzog up top. You know, I think the change from what we've typically seen is putting Kerr in that holding midfield position. But we've talked about in the past how putting him there along with more of a stay-at-home player like Branson allows him to really sort of float between the lines and be that player that comes late into the attack, which he's really, really good at. So I would like to see that. I think we're going to do a 4-2-3-1, whether or not we see Kerr there or we see somebody like a Mike Green or even an Okai. And then curse further up the pitch is anybody's guess. But what do you think?
Even just what you were saying there at the end, I mean, that's starting to get really exciting and encouraging to be able to bring people off the bench like Green and Akai. I mean, that's good. We need a deeper squad and someone we can bring on the game to change it in either direction. I mean, so Green, maybe if we're ahead and we want to maybe tighten up, you bring Green on. If maybe we're chasing a goal, you put Okai on or something like that. So I think that's really important. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I've been really impressed with Branson in the past couple games. He looks like a proper holding midfielder. I think his physicality in there has been great. I want to see more Maloto. I thought he had a really strong game. Was it against Louisville, I believe? Where he played?
That was when he hit... Louisville was his first game back where he played out wide,
right?
And he seemed like he was a bit of a step off. I think you mean Charleston, where he was much more active in the midfield.
Maybe that was it. So I would want to keep seeing Maloto there as well. I mean, yeah, I personally I'd like to see more of a 4-4-2. I just want to give Parks and Herzog free rein. Look, go attack. You know, cut off the passing lanes and do your bit defensively. By maybe pressuring their center backs or their holding midfielders and making sure the passing lanes are cut off. But simultaneously, let them play together because I think they're developing a nice little partnership there. I think Moloto can do a really nice job out wide. Not necessarily as like a winger, but more of like a wide midfielder, more of like a classic wide midfielder, giving him license to maybe kind of drift inside sometimes. And I think Hollingsworth is just, I don't know. I think maybe sometimes in the past games he's been getting caught a bit too narrow for me. I think he's most effective when he's out there getting chalk on his boots and really kind of keeping the pitch wide and giving us options to really stretch the pitch. And he has the pace to take on anyone. He can just knock the ball past any defender. And I think we'll get a lot of joy if we kind of focus on a counterattack with him. Especially, I don't know, it seemed like the Red Bulls liked attacking. I don't know. I'd be interested to see your opinion on this, but it seemed like they liked attacking wide up their left side with their left back. So maybe, I don't know, maybe putting Hollingsworth on that side and trying to catch their fullback maybe up the pitch a bit high, and then, you know, getting the ball wide to Hollingsworth and just going down that right side might be beneficial. Yeah, I'd like to see something like a 4-4-2 with Hollingsworth, Moloto out wide, maybe, yeah, Branson and Kerr, the two central midfielders, and then the same back four we've been seeing. But
yeah,
I doubt.
Yeah, I also failed to mention that Romeo Parks made USL Team of the Week this week. So again, big ups, man. Well deserved.
Absolutely.
He's now, if you
if
you go to the USL's stats leaderboard, he's now on the board for goals with 4 for the season. So again, kudos to him. So yeah, that's what we think, you know, the lineup could be. Again, it could just all be out the window. Who knows? But so Kev, based on, I think I went first last week. So at least for Charleston.
Yeah, we shared it. By the way, I was really upset because I knew I called a 2-2 with Louisville. I was like, yes, I think I might have got points up on Mike. And then I checked back. I was like, you called.
I prices rated
well.
You. I did. I prices rated.
Can't
you.
Even get a
bump bump bum, bum.
Yeah. So. I think we're in a positive way, and I think Red Bulls, you know, maybe might be a bit, you know, distraught coming off their first loss and in the manner in which it happened. You know, big night back at Highmark. Honestly, I would be happy with a draw. Once again, let's just not lose for the next, like, you know, couple games, and then we could start, you know, make that the platform that we jump off of. We can absolutely go on and win this game, but I'm going to say I'm going to say a 2-1 win to the Hounds. 2-1.
Dang you!
Gonna say?
That was gonna be my.
My other kind of 50-50 I was going with was a 1-1 draw, so I'll say 1-1.
Okay.
So you can.
So when the hounds win 2-1, you're not allowed to come back.
You give me like half your points.
half your. That's no fun. All right, I'm gonna say a 2-1 win to the Hounds, and I think that the end of the game is gonna be some squeaky bum time where, the Red Bulls are gonna be pressing high up the field, and we're gonna be sitting compact trying to counter, but we just can't get it out. But I think with an army of superheroes in the stands, that's going to be enough to really sort of push us over the edge. And
it's almost like
you
wrote that beforehand, Mike. That was well.
And I didn't. It's not on the page. No, I think everything that we said is true. I think that's one of the things, you know, looking at this Red Bulls team and seeing how well they've done, seeing how they can be exploited, it's somewhat ironic that those things are the few things that we've done well this season. And so I think that we have a good shot of putting a few away, and I think if we hunker down, you know, defensively and even goaltending wise, we've been pretty solid. I think there was an interview, I think it was Inside the Box. Is that the show they do, where they interviewed Hunter, and he said that, you know, he thought that defensively they've been pretty solid the past few games. Now they just need to work on the other side of the ball, and I agree. And I think this could be the game where they do it. It'll be good to get their first win on Superhero Night. When they're recognizing breast cancer survivors, that'd be fantastic, and, you know, start off May the right way. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's it. Kev, do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about?
I think that's it for me as well, Mike.
Well, we ended up talking a lot longer about the Red Bulls than I thought we would. A few things just to wrap things up here. We do intend on having more interviews, so just sit tight because we're going to start filling up the pipeline here. A lot of people that we're going to be talking to. This midweek show is going to end up turning into sort of half interview, half preview. So if there's anybody that you want us to talk to, whether they're on the Hounds or not, you know, they could be anybody sort of associated with, you know, news in the area, commentating, anything like that, let us know. We'll be happy to have them on and talk to them. But like I said, that schedule's going to be filling up pretty quickly here. Let us know. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, at Mongols, on Facebook, Mongols. Yeah, otherwise, for Kev, I am Mike. Enjoy the rest of the week. Get out to the game. Dress up as your best superhero. Send us some of your picks. Put them up on Twitter. We'd love to see them. And go Hounds. And we'll talk to you very, very soon.
Cheers.